We're very lucky to have with us tonight Mrs. Star Mindy Cinnamon, who is going to speak to us. I think her talk is called Climbing the Mountains of Life. Sorry, you may have been introduced to Star Mindy a little bit if you got a chance to come over in this corner. It was a little crowded if you arrived late, so if not, then please come over afterward where we have some beautiful artwork displayed. Some of this artwork is Star Mindy's, the collages, the beautiful gem collages are Star Mindy's work, and the other drawings and paintings that are here were done by Star Mindy's mother, Mrs. Esky Cook. That's a name some of you may be familiar with. If you've had a child in preschool, particularly in Laura Marion Lichtenstein's preschool class, you're familiar with Esky's little drawings. Esky is a very, very well-known illustrator in the Jewish world, and we are very pleased to have her here tonight as well. And I think that Star Mindy will share with us her life experiences, and Star Mindy is blind, and she's going to share with us how the way that she sees the world in her special way. As we see from this artwork, it is a very unique and special way. And I think that Esky Cook's, you know, presence in her life as her mother, an artist's eye, has really enriched all Star Mindy's experiences, and I'm sure we'll hear more about that. And certainly having Esky's work here tonight enriches our understanding of that. Star Mindy's going to speak for a little while, and then she would like to field questions from the audience. So I will come up and be the moderator at that point, just to sort of call on people who have questions, young people, younger people. So please don't hesitate or feel shy about it. I think Star Mindy really wants to give us the fullest picture of the wonderful, inspiring way that she lives her life. Star Mindy.
Hello, everyone. I just want to, first of all, thank Rachel Bieberfeld for asking me to come speak. And I also want to just welcome a couple people that came. My sister's mother-in-law, Mrs. Linda Garfield, who we feel very close to. And also my very close friend, Cyril Abraham, who came from a different neighborhood in Philadelphia. I think it's like half hour away or something. So thank you for coming. And also my mother, hey, thanks for coming. I'm going to start by mentioning some common misconceptions about blindness. First of all, people think that my blindness is something private and embarrassing for me to talk about. So I just want to be clear to all of you that speaking about being blind for me is just like speaking about any other topic with your family or Shabbos plans. So you can feel comfortable to ask me any questions that about what I said in my speech or about my blindness in general when I'm finished talking. Another misconception that I sometimes encounter in everyday life is sometimes people think that a blind person, because that means they're also like deaf or dumb. What I mean by that is when I go somewhere, instead of talking to me, many times a salesperson or the flight attendant will talk to the person standing next to me. Like one time I was on a plane and the flight attendant said, does she want a drink? And I said, sure, I'll take a drink. And they're like, oh, so sorry. And sometimes people just think because I'm blind, that means I can't walk. Like in the airport, they might ask me if I need a wheelchair. And sometimes the salesperson will just treat me like a child by saying to the person next to me, like, oh, I love her hair. Isn't she pretty? Or something. But sometimes there are benefits to being treated differently. For example, if I go through a metal detector in the airport, if they're always extra nice to me if it beeps. And sometimes I even get pushed to the front of the line. It's also convenient having a handicap placard, which is a card that allows me to park in a handicap spot. And it's convenient because I could use it in whatever car I'm going in, and so it's an incentive for someone to give me a ride. another misconception that people might, sometimes people think that they can't use the words like see or look around me. In fact, I always use those words. Like, I'll tell someone, I'll see you later. Or when you say to me, did you see so-and-so? That's fine. It means what seeing means to me, like how I perceive things. Like if I go somewhere and I say, I saw this person, that person, meaning I met them, I was talking to them. A last misconception is that people think that I don't appreciate photographs, or they wonder how I could appreciate something so visual. It's ironic that my mother is an artist and photographer. Her whole job involves sight. So maybe it's because of this that I've come to value photographs a lot. They capture memories that people can describe to me later. So even if I can't see the actual picture, I could show them to other people. For example, if I go somewhere with my husband, when I come back, I could show my family or friends pictures of things that we did when we went somewhere. A lot of times when my family is together, I'll think of a good pose and my mother will listen to my suggestion and she'll take the picture. On another note, as Rachel was talking about, I also enjoy doing art. And by this, I mean creating collages with jewels, mirrors, buttons, etc. And I brought some samples with me, as we were talking about before, that they're displayed on the tables. So even though I can't actually see photos or drawings, I have an appreciation for the world of sight. And similarly, I have given my mother an appreciation for the non-visual world. For example, she often tells me how she never really paid attention to music, like the voices of the singer, the intricate harmonies, or the different musical instruments that make songs sound so pretty. So together, me and my mother, we make a good team. My mother also taught me to see the good in everything, and that became the attitude of my whole family. My siblings don't see me as a blind girl who happens to be their sister, but rather as their sister who happens to be blind. And just a funny story, this happened when I was younger. One summer I went to a camp, a sleepaway camp, and my younger sister Cyril was reading me the list, things I needed to bring. She said, "There's a sleeping bag, a flashlight." I said, "Yeah, I don't need a flashlight." She's like, "No, you need a flashlight." I'm like, "I don't need a flashlight." I'm like, "Cyril, I'm blind." She's like, "Oh." So it's just funny. Now I'll try to share some events in my life that I think you'll find interesting. So I'll begin with what it was like for me to apply to seminary in Israel. So to me, it didn't seem unusual that I was planning to apply to seminary in Eretz Yisrael. My whole life, I accomplished so much until that point, always working hard to do what was considered normal, so why would I stop now? But later, my father told me that some people said to him, "I don't know, it's not my business, I really shouldn't say anything, but I don't know, you're going to let Sarmindi go to seminary?" So anyway, I applied to Maor, and I really was set on going there. And a very interesting thing happened at my interview with Rabbi Greenwald. So since I didn't have every meforash, every commentary in Braille, my teacher told me to prepare one. So I did. And when it was my turn to be interviewed, I told Rabbi Greenwald that I prepared this meforash. And he said, "Well, that wouldn't be fair to the other girls, because no one else prepares before." So he suggested that I open up my mefarshim, and wherever it opens to, I would read and explain. And I opened up a Sifsei Chachamim and began to read. Arva'a chashuvim kemes. Four people are considered dead. Ani, a poor person. Suma, a blind person. So I can imagine the expression on Rabbi face while I was reading this. So the fact that I randomly opened up to this chazal, thereby presenting me the opportunity to deal with such a delicate issue without making a big deal about it, was to Rabbi Greenwald a sign from Shemayim to say that he's going to accept me. So I got into more art. And now came the challenges of actually being in seminary. So one of the things that was hard was it's hard, you know, for anyone to make new friends. But for me especially, I didn't know everyone's voices, and I didn't know how to find someone if I wanted to talk to them. And people would sit down at the tables for lunch, and I didn't know where everyone was. And we'd go on trips, and everyone would just go on the buses, and I didn't know where to sit or how to find someone I wanted to sit with. But then I learned my way around the dorm and the school, and I learned the voices, and I you know, sometimes I would make up with someone to sit next to them at lunch, and I worked everything out, and Baruch Hashem, I made a lot of friends in seminary, and I had a great year. And then I got back from seminary, and the next big hurdle that I had to face was Shidduchim, and along with that, feeling confident that I could run my own home. So I was very worried that no one would want to go out with me. And as a lot of my friends were getting red shidduchim and even getting engaged, nobody was reading me to anyone that seemed suitable. Sometimes people would just read me to boys with handicaps, not because their personality seemed like a good match for me, but just because, you know, they're a firm boy with a handicap and I'm a firm girl with a handicap. So, my mother used to say, you only need to go out with one boy, don't worry. But at the time I was getting more and more worried, and I lived on Yeshiva Lane, the campus of Neri Yisrael in Baltimore. And besides for the 230 boys in the high school, there are over 400 in the Beis Medrash, and there's also over 200 in the Kollel. So being that my father is a Rebbe and we always had Bacharim over for the Shabbos meals, I saw this great idea. I would just bake and cook, you know, different things, and then my father would invite someone who seemed like, to, you know, a good shidduch, and then he would have such a good time, he'd want to go out with me. But it didn't really work out like that. And I was davening and not knowing what else to do. I decided to concentrate on strengthening my skills in independent living. So I researched where I could find a program that could help a blind adult with these skills. And although there are not so many of these programs throughout America, amazingly, there are two such programs in Baltimore. So I enrolled in one of them, and from the beginning, it was a disaster. They had this very strong philosophy, which I don't subscribe to. They were proud of being blind to an extreme. And I'll just give you some examples to explain what I mean. So they didn't want anyone to use a cane that could fold up, because they said that if someone used that, that shows that they're embarrassed to be blind, so they just fold up the cane. But meanwhile, it's so impractical. Like, let's say when I go in a car, where do I put the cane? I just fold it up, or when I go somewhere, I just fold it up and put it on the table. It's much more convenient. And they wanted me to relearn everything their way. So not only was I not learning new things, but I was losing the confidence to do even the things that I already knew how to do. So after realizing how ridiculous this was, I found another program that I really enjoyed. And the teachers were extremely nice. And in this program, they helped me practice skills like ironing, cooking, sweeping, and they even taught me how to use email. But the most important thing that I learned from them was self-confidence. They taught me that a blind person can have a job, can get married, can raise a family, and can do almost anything. except for maybe drive, but everything else. Actually, in the summer, I went with my husband. We went to this place. We went bumper boating, and it was like at night, and it was closing. There weren't so many, really anyone there. And I thought it would be really boring if we both went in the same boat. We couldn't get the experience, so I decided I'll just drive my own boat. And I listened for the sound of like the motor, and I don't know, they said I was one of the best drivers. So I guess I could drive that. So after a couple months of being in the program, I was ready to move on. And now I really wanted to put my plans into action, and I wanted to find the right shidduch. And just when things seemed very bleak, I got a phone call from a close friend of mine, and she said that her chassan had an idea for me. And he agreed to go out with me. He flew into Baltimore from Eretz Yisrael. We went out a few times, and the rest is history. You're probably wondering how we went out. He didn't drive at the time, and I didn't see. But between my parents and a couple of friends who took care of the driving, and me using my cane to walk next to him, we managed to work it out. Although I did have some near misses. I didn't get hurt, but I almost knocked other people over. So then we got married, and shortly afterwards we moved to Israel. Even though I already knew how to bake and do some cooking in my parents' house, it was hard for me to adjust to a new kitchen, learning how to use a new oven, stove, magic mill, food processor, and a new layout in the kitchen were all much harder than I expected. I found it very convenient that my husband was a Boy Scout for many years, so as a result, he learned how to cook and do a bunch of other things in the house, which are very helpful. One of my most satisfying experiences happened while I was in Eretz Yisrael. It was a very hot day, and I really wanted some fruit, and my husband couldn't go with me to the store. So finally I decided to just go myself, and I called the store and I asked the owner if he would show me where things were when I got there. And I took my cane and I just went, and I never practiced walking there before. I wasn't exactly sure about where to go, but I listened for familiar sounds, and I used my cane to find landmarks that clued me where I was. And being that I had a cell phone, I knew that I could contact someone if I got lost. So I got to the store, bought some fruit, and then I returned home. And I knew I reached my house when I heard my neighbor talking outside the apartment building. And it was a great feeling to know that I could just go to the fruit store. Another great thing about being in Eretz Yisrael was the availability of cabs. Whenever I wanted to go somewhere, I could just pick up the phone, call a taxi, and within 2 minutes the driver would be honking impatiently outside my door. I now felt that I wasn't really dependent on anything except for the money to pay for the cabs. So here in Baltimore there are cabs, but it's not as convenient. I also found it extremely helpful that Israeli children would always come over to me and offer their assistance. So we stayed in Eretz Yisrael for a year and a half, and initially it was very good, but eventually it got too hard being so far from family and having so little family support, and it was also very hard for me not having a job every day. I know like a lot of not a lot of American wives, you know, get married. They have the same difficulty, but just having no structure to my day was a very unsettling feeling. So we moved back, and at that point, I very much wanted to get a job. As I love working with children, I was looking for something in that field, or at least a job that involved working with people. And I felt qualified to work in a preschool since I ran a day camp for 3 and 4 year olds for about 5 summers. So I applied all over, but nothing ever materialized. Nobody seemed interested. A few people gave me interviews, but me being blind was just too much for them. They couldn't imagine how I could do it. and it became depressing trying, and the options almost seemed hopeless. I was really frustrated. So at this point, when we moved back to Baltimore from Eretz Yisrael, I decided this is it. I need to get a job. And then I heard about a Kriya tutoring program in Yeshivas Chafetz Chaim, TA, an elementary boys' school in Baltimore. And I called Rabbi Kahana, the principal of TA, who told me to come right over for an interview. So already I could see some light at the end of the tunnel. And at the interview, he was so positive and confident that I could do the job. He offered me a job on the spot. And I couldn't believe it. I was very excited. And I began working in TA that September, and this is my fifth year working there. So you're probably wondering how I could teach Kriya, Hebrew reading. So Baruch Hashem, any text that the boys have, I can get hold of it in Braille. And as they're reading, I follow along with mine and correct them if they make mistakes. I use a Braille Tehillim, and I even have a Kriya workbook, Brailled, that I can use that too. So I love my job, and I love kids, and working with them on an individual basis is so much fun for me. I could help them practice reading and at the same time connect to them and be like an adult friend for them in school. I love talking to the kids and hearing their interesting comments. Of course, children are always much more open than adults, and they're never shy to ask me any questions that come to mind. They ask me questions like how I tell time, how I read, how I know where to go. There's funny stories. One time I was, I read with the boys like in the hallway, at a desk outside the classroom. And a boy was reading, and he was about to start reading. I said, "Oh, who just walked by?" And he said, "How did you know?" I said, "I heard them." He's like, "Oh, so you don't really need eyes if you could hear." So I don't know. And also, this is just another story, nothing to do with the reading, but one time my friend, when her brother was 4 years old, I think he brought me this pool slipper, like a flip-flop and with bumps on it, and he said, "Could you read this?" And then also something interesting that I went to a second grade class this year to talk to them about being, show them some things, how I read, about being blind, because they were in connection to something they were learning about. And they wrote me thank you letters, and one boy wrote such an amazing thing, I couldn't believe he wrote, "Thank you for showing us how blind people see." So I thought that was really amazing. Anyway, even though Baruch Hashem, I have overcome many obstacles in the past, there are still hurdles to cross, and in fact there are numerous other challenges that I haven't even mentioned, which I did not overcome so smoothly, and I still have sometimes have different things that come up, like everyone. And sometimes in the past I felt like giving up, but Baruch Hashem, I had a last half of the smile and I pulled through. And I'm sure that each one of you can give your own speech about challenges in your lives that you struggled with to get to where you are today. I once heard that each of the Avos have a unique challenge in life, and that if we look at our own lives today, we can find similarities to each of them. Avram Avinu's challenge was to find Hashem in a world that didn't believe. So essentially, he was the first Baal Tshuva. And Yitzchak's challenge was to find Hashem for himself and make his life meaningful while growing up as Avram's son when everything was just handed to him. Yaakov's challenge was to persevere in the face of many difficulties, having his brother Esav try to kill him, had to run away from home, being tricked by Laban numerous times in marriage and in wages, having Dina kidnapped and losing his wife Rachel prematurely, thinking that Yosef was killed. Overcoming these difficulties made Yaakov into the great person that he was. Another example is Moshe Rabbeinu. He's considered the greatest Jewish leader of all times. What would be a quality that you would expect to find in a great leader? A charismatic speaker, but Moshe Rabbeinu had a speech impediment, and he was hesitant to become the leader for this reason. But he became their leader, and he was one of the greatest leaders ever. So this too should give hope to anyone who feels that some challenge is stopping us from accomplishing what we want to do. No one has everything perfect, and the challenge is figuring out how to use what we do have to be the most successful that we can be. There's an interesting phenomenon when it comes to challenges. To show what I mean, I'll use the example of the challenge of climbing Mount Everest. So climbing Mount Everest may be difficult and painful, but people do it for pleasure, because no pleasure compares to that great feeling of accomplishing something that seems impossible. So if we could think of overcoming challenges like climbing Mount Everest, then every hard step along the way is a step closer to that exhilarating feeling of reaching our goal. And of course we have to daven to Hashem. Hashem is behind everything we do. We have to daven for His help. And I'd like to wish everyone hatzlacha, success in any challenges that you experience. And thank you for inviting me and listening. And if anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to answer. And if you could say your name, I'd like to know who I'm talking to.
Okay, Aaliyah, did you have your hands up? I guess if I call on you, you can say your name so that everybody knows who you are, and then you can ask the question.
Hey, Aaliyah, I was wondering if you ever imagine what your kids look like.
If I ever imagine what my kids would look like?
Yeah, or if you look like.
I don't have any children yet, but I usually really more think of people like what their voices sound like or what their personalities are like, not so much what they look like. But that's a good question.
Okay, yeah.
Are you reading, or did you memorize your speech, your talk?
I was reading a little bit, and I was doing a little bit of both.
What kind of machine is this that you were using?
So this is, I could type into it, and then it comes up on the screen while I could read what I'm writing, and or I could read any notes. It's like a little note taker. Also, it talks if I turn on the speech, and then I could plug it into a printer, and then it prints out either in print or in braille. There's different printers, what I wrote.
Devorah.
Wait, what's your name, Devorah? Oh, okay. So that's a good question. So my mother usually tells me which colors go together, and then I make a design with those things.
Oh, okay, good. Sarah?
No, I don't feel people's faces. Okay.
More questions from the. I think the children have a lot of questions here too. Okay, yeah. And then Ayala. So we'll Ayala.
Who taught me? So I had a teacher I had a Braille teacher, someone who was trained, and when I was younger, I was like in kindergarten or first grade. And what was your other question? Where do I get Hebrew? Oh, so there's a couple places that oh, really? Well, there's an organization in New York. It's called CSB, Computer Sciences for the Blind. I'm not sure what it stands for. Yeah, I think it says stands for. So there are one place that maybe.
Ilana?
My name's Ilana Galtish. You mentioned that there have been instances where you encountered adversity.
Wait, instances were what?
Where there was adversity maybe because of your blindness? Do you mind relating?
Wait, where there was
adversity.
Adversity.
Like difficulties and challenges that you had to, that were struggles because of it.
It was just related to struggles.
Well, I think I mentioned some in my speech. I mean, that was what it was about.
Are there any other ones that come to mind and how you responded to that?
I think those are the ones that come to mind right now. But.
Okay.
Miriam?
Was I in a mainstream classroom? Yes, I was. I was pulled out a class to learn Braille. And,
but otherwise, you were able to follow along in school?
Yeah. When I was like in younger grades, I was in a public school just because like the law teachers couldn't come into to private school. But then I switched to Basiaco.
And did you find that it affected you socially very much?
It affected me socially?
Same word,
girl
next to you.
Oh.
Like, was it hard?
Was it hard being in school?
Yes, with friends. Did it make a difference?
No, I think everyone just saw me as normal. And
in Baltimore, everyone is really, really nice.
Everyone has challenges. This is just, some are more obvious, and this is one of the more obvious ones. So.
Ellie?
Okay. How did you bake and cook? That's interesting. So I use the measuring cups that are the size of the measurement, and like a half a cup, which is the size of, I don't know if you've seen them, and then. And a lot of people have them. And then I have like some stickers on the oven to show me which one, how to know which is the on button and the one for the temperature for 350. And I use mitts. And sometimes someone helps me take out because I don't always know when it's ready. But I have a timer and, you know.
There was a question from this table, yeah.
What made you decide to do artwork and
what made me decide to do artwork? I don't know. I just always liked arts and crafts since I was little, and I don't know. It's just a fun thing to do.
Ariel?
My name's Ariella. Okay. I was looking at your pictures, and I see you have some of asparagus and raspberries.
Oh, that's my mother's.
Oh, that's your mother's.
But my mother's right here in the audience, so.
Well, they're beautiful.
That was for Esky, that applause. Other questions? Miss Rosen. Yaffe. Sorry.
How did it feel to be in a school where you were blind and no one else was?
How did it feel to be in a school where I was blind and no one else was? Like everyone has things that are hard for them, and that was just being blind. It was just another thing that I had to deal with. And I don't know.
Kara?
Does someone help you with your artwork and your creativity?
No, my mother just gives me the colors that go together, and I just make my own. Whatever. Usually, I make. Sometimes my mother gives me ideas, but and then.
Your designs are so perfectly symmetrical, way better than mine would ever be. So how do you do that?
I don't know, I guess I feel where the things are. Sometimes my mother helps me, like, center or something in the middle of the board, but other things I just feel where it is.
Like, there's one on there that has this perfect oval.
Oh, that I use, like, a thing to, a cutter to trace it.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, I should try feeling it instead of looking at it. Maybe I would be more even.
Yeah, but I use a cutter.
Uh-huh, okay. The circles are perfect, too.
Yeah, I also use that, something to trace it with.
Uh-huh. Miriam, you had another question?
People say that.
I know, is it true?
Right.
Do you see that you hear very, very well, or you feel?
I wouldn't know, so I don't know how other people are, so.
Esty?
Your story is so powerful and inspiring, and I'm just wondering how often you go and talk, how often
it depends, like different times, I don't know.
Philadelphia is going to put her on the world stage, so it's not going to be a problem. Beverly?
How did the mainstream teachers accommodate you in their classrooms?
I used this computer, or I had another machine to take notes, and I don't know, sometimes it was hard if they wanted to get the sheets in Braille, they would, if there's a certain printer that if it's printed up, they could just, if it's typed on the computer, they could print it out, someone could print it out. So sometimes I took tests like that, or sometimes I took tests orally, and I don't know, everything was different, but.
Shani, you had a question?
When you were growing up, were you interested in learning any instrument? Is what you played?
Was I interested in learning an instrument? So I played piano a little bit.
Rivka?
Were you blind from birth?
Yeah, I was born blind. Sorry.
Did it get worse?
No, always the same. I was born totally blind, and that's how I am, so. I think that's easier than someone who becomes blind, because then,
Rivka Levy?
Can you write in Hebrew or English? Can you write something?
You mean like regular letters?
Yeah.
So I could write some English, like capital letters, because like I sign my initials and some letters, but.
Kaya?
I can't see anything. I know it's hard to imagine, but I can't see anything. I don't see black or anything.
Eve?
Rosen, to follow up with that question, what things do you use to shade? Like, if the sun is shining, can you tell that it's lighter?
No. I could feel the heat of the sun, but I can't see anything.
So not shading
is
your feet? No. You don't know if the light is on or off.
Nope.
Okay, and I think we'll end where we started. Aaliyah, you're trying very hard to ask another question, so there we go. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. You have to speak really loud, okay?
Do I ever what?
She asked if you hope to be a role model for any other kids.
And who is your role model?
And who is your role model? That's a great ending question, Rahel. Thank you.
Wow. Well, for sure, my parents and my family, and I don't know.
And I think that the first part of the question we all have already answered to about Sarah Mindy being a role model for others. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.